Welcome to Minnesota Military Radio, where we bring you information about Minnesota's National Guard, the military community, Beyond the Yellow Ribbon Program, and Department of Veterans Affairs. Your host is Tom Lyons, founder and owner of Phalon Partners Limited, a Twin Cities merger and acquisition advisory firm. Tom is also a Vietnam veteran of the United States Air Force and a member of the VFW and American Legion. Now, here's Tom Lyons.
Welcome to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. On today's show, we'll hear a local veteran's story about starting a business, and we'll see what it takes to make a successful transition from military to civilian life. But first, it's time for Generally Speaking, a weekly message from the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, Major General Rick Nash.
Our Minnesota National Guard is continually working to enhance partnerships throughout our communities. In no case are these partnerships more important than at Camp Ripley. Camp Ripley is a 53,000-acre regional training facility for our military, federal, state, local, and civilian communities. A lot of events happen at Camp Ripley. The Camp Ripley's Visitor Bureau is a flurry of activity as they work to report on many, many events each month for the Ripley Reporter online magazine. But it doesn't stop there. Our community media outlets around Camp Ripley have stepped up to take an active role in sharing what happens on base. The Brainerd Dispatch runs weekly stories, and KLTF Radio in Little Falls airs stories frequently. Even the area cable access station welcomes our Minnesota National Guard leadership into their studio monthly for interviews about what is happening at Camp Ripley. These partnerships in the communication community around Camp Ripley are remarkable. Don't get me wrong, I see news stories about our units and about our yellow ribbon networks in medium and small town newspapers and across airwaves statewide. But I today want to thank the Camp Ripley community for sharing our stories and ensuring the sustainability of this state's resource.
Thank you, General Nash. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. Joining me now to talk about veteran-owned small business is Gabe Broughton-Lee. Gabe, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thank you, Tom. Thanks for having me on.
Gabe, I understand you were in the service.
I was, yes.
Can you tell us a little about it?
Yes, I was in the Army National Guard for 8 years. I got in 2001, got out in 2009, did one tour overseas in support of Operation Iraqi Freedom, and now I'm out.
And now you're out. Eight years in the Minnesota Army National Guard. Thanks for your service.
Absolutely.
When you were in the Minnesota Army National Guard, I assume you were employed?
Yes.
Various jobs, I suppose.
Yeah, I was actually full-time school and part-time work.
A little busy guy.
Yeah, that was a busy time in life. It still is, but.
Okay, we want to talk a little bit today about veterans owning or starting their own business. At what point in your career as a Minnesota National Army National Guardsman, or what point in your civilian life did you think that, hey, wake up one day and say, I want to be in business for myself? How did this happen?
Well, it was a combination of a lot of factors. It was a time in my life when I was graduating school and I had just gotten back from overseas and was exiting out of the military. And I had also just moved back from LA. I was in a film program out there for about half a year. And so it was kind of this point where I had to ask, what's the next step? And I had worked in cell phone sales all the way through college. And so I had all this experience doing that, and I thought, hey, maybe I should consider opening a wireless store. And I had a friend that was doing it, and he had success with it. And so worked at his store in Blaine for about a year and figured it was something that I could probably do. And so.
So somewhere along the line, you thought, this looks fairly easy. I think I can do this.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So you started researching what it would take to set up your own store?
That's correct, and it always helps to have a friend in the industry who can advise you on those things. And with all the experience I had gained, it was pretty clear that I could handle it and that it wouldn't be terribly difficult.
Now it's a big jump to go from being an employee to being your own owning your own business and having all the risk of owning your own business.
Yes,
it's kind of a big jump, isn't it?
It certainly is. Yes,
but you took it.
I did, and I realized pretty quickly that managing people is very different than managing soldiers.
Well, I suppose there's some similarities, but the civilians are if they haven't been in the military, maybe don't have quite as much discipline as our service members do.
That can be the case sometimes. It's just sort of a different interaction.
So when you decided you wanted to be in business and you liked the cell phone business, did you look around for a franchise? How did you go about finding the one that you wanted to start?
I narrowed it down pretty quickly. I knew that I wanted to be a part of Verizon because my experience in the wireless industry indicated that Verizon was the biggest company. They were making a lot of really good moves, and they were very friendly to the franchise system. And so once I had nailed that down, it was a matter of just working with my friend in Blaine, Chuck Rosenthal, and Mike Morse. And they decided to go with Wireless Zone as a franchise because of their signage package and the commissions they paid and basically their whole philosophy on customer service. And so just being a part of that system, I decided pretty quickly that was the best way to go.
So you talked to some people that had already done it.
That's right.
Talked you through the process.
Mm-hmm.
Then at some point you had to contact Verizon and get what's called a franchise offering circular. Uh-huh. Remember you had to sign for that document?
Oh, yeah. You have it to be approved by Verizon as a corporation and Wireless Zone as a franchise. And that's not even getting into being approved for a loan by the bank.
And then at some point you had to figure out, now how much money do I need to buy the franchise, set up the store, get the furniture, fixture, and equipment, get into business, and you probably had to go to some training for Verizon to be a franchise owner, right?
That's correct. Yeah, we had 3 weeks of training out in Connecticut, and so that was part of it. And yeah, there were a lot of stars that had to align to kind of get it to work. So it was a process.
So did you put together a team, an attorney, a banker, an accountant to help you with the projections and the numbers and figure out the capital?
Absolutely, yeah. I was pretty fortunate how that came together. My cousin, Josh Tucker, is a lawyer. And so I asked him, do you have any friends that would be able to help me out with this? And he mentioned to me a man named Daniel Reif, who was absolutely fantastic. I mean, a really great guy to work with and really knew his stuff. It was very clear that he was very knowledgeable. And starting to work with him, he actually referred me to the credit union, City and County Credit Union, to a woman named Wanda Borg, who subsequently approved us for a loan working with her. So it kind of fell into place pretty quickly for me. I was lucky.
We're speaking with Gabe Broughton Lee about veteran-owned small businesses and his experience in putting together a Verizon franchise on Minnesota Military Radio. So, Gabe, you got an attorney, and he pointed you to a banker. You still had a lot of loan paperwork to go through, and you participated in the Patriot Express loan.
That's correct.
Can you tell me a little bit about that process with the credit union?
Yeah, it's really a matter of, you know, setting up a meeting, and you want to go in there with a very clear business plan. And also, I went in there with my resume. It was also, I should mention, my business partner, Ken Babin, was instrumental there too. And so we set up a meeting. We went in there with a business plan, our resumes, our letters of recommendation, and just a couple articles on the wireless industry and the way the franchise works and how Wireless Zone and Verizon performed among other carriers. And so going in there with that information, it was just basically a process of convincing them that we were good candidates to lend a decent amount of money to and to pay that off.
Sound as though that by talking to your friends and your attorney, you were pretty well prepared before you went to the credit union. And of course, there's a lot of paperwork involved, and it takes a little time to get those first loans when you first go into business.
Oh, yes, absolutely. And the veteran status was absolutely instrumental in that. You know, in this economy, it's not uncommon to be expected to have up to 80% collateral towards the loan that you're borrowing. And we were able to get approved with a 20% collateral on the $150,000 loan that we asked for. So I'm very blessed.
Gabe, you put together a team, you had an attorney, and they got you to the credit union. And I'm assuming somewhere along the line you had to run some projections, maybe meet a CPA?
Yes.
Some key ingredients to owning a business is you need that good legal advice, you got to make sure you do the accounting right, and you need a good bank standing behind you.
Very true.
So then I want to talk a little bit about the credit union. It was an experienced and authorized Patriot Express loan lender.
Mm-hmm.
And for our veterans that are listening and aren't familiar with that, the Patriot Express Pilot Loan Initiative allows lenders with Patriot Express authority to make offers similar to lenders with SBA Express or give loans to veterans. To be eligible to get a Patriot Express loan, you must be a veteran, service-disabled veteran, active-duty service member, reservists, National Guard members, or spouses of any of the above, or widow of any of the above. So, Gabe, you were fortunate enough to have talked to some business owners that have already gone through the process of setting up a franchise.
Correct.
So you had your documents in order, and you had all of these things. You went and met the lender at the credit union and handed them all this stuff, and mm-hmm. she came back and said, so you think you want to be a business owner?
Yes.
And then the work started, didn't it?
Absolutely. Yeah.
How many hoops did you have to jump through to satisfy the bank?
Oh, well, it was a lot. The process of being approved by Verizon as a corporation and Wireless Own as a franchise, that was preliminary to the actual loan. We had to wait. We had to kind of sweat it out for 2 months before we got the word that we were finally approved. And once we handed off all the paperwork and all the projections and things like that, though, it was pretty much a sit and wait type of thing. They would ask for a new document every now and then, but it was a long 2 months.
In today's economy, the banks, the lenders, have to document their files
yes.
more completely than they ever have in the last 40 years. So, number one, I congratulate you on getting the loan, the Patriot Express loan, and number two, and getting it done in a poor economy. That's a hard thing to do.
It certainly was.
Now, I would assume I've been helping people buy and sell businesses for many years, and one of the reasons people look at franchises is because it's a proven business concept.
Correct.
And other franchisees have done it, set up businesses, successful. So the training that Verizon provided you had to be very important.
Yes. Yes, it was. Yeah, that's the franchise model. It's a business in a box. It's proven. And I'm sure since it was the first time I asked for a loan, a business loan, that definitely played into their decision-making process. And the training was very good. It was
essential.
It was essential. And it was funny too, because we got approved for the loan literally a week before we left for training. So, I mean, it was a nail biter.
Well, good thing you were deployed and you could take a little stress like that. Nobody was shooting at you, so you're all right. So when did you finally open the business, Gabe?
We were open for business in November of 2010. So it's been just over 2.5 years.
And what have you learned in 2.5 years, and what experience can you share with other veterans thinking about starting a business?
The best thing to do is just be, hope for the best and prepare for the worst, I think is probably the best. And at the end of the day, if you're opening a business, you have to be prepared for the bottom line and sort of what you're going to do in a situation that things aren't turning out as well as you want them to, because that, I think that could rattle a lot of people, you know, and it's gone well for 2.5 years, but we've certainly had to, definitely adjust our projections.
So you had to have enough capital so that you could not only open the store, buy the furniture, fixtures, and equipment, buy the inventory, hire some people, do the training, but you had to have some dry powder, as we say, in case there was some times where you weren't making any money. And starting up a business, you know, there's no sure thing. You're not necessarily going to be profitable from the first day.
That's exactly true. And I can tell you know what you're talking about, because that's what happened.
And I just have to ask you this. A small business owner wears all the hats. You had to deal with the lease. You had to deal with the bank. You had to deal with hiring people. You had to deal with all the payroll laws and rules and how you pay them and how you pay the withholding taxes and all of that. You have to wear every hat, and you have to be able to sell. You have to be able to collect. You have to deal with everything, don't you?
That's absolutely true. It's been a learning experience, and I was fortunate to have a really good business partner who could help me out with that. So two heads are better than one sort of thing, and an excellent support system around me of other franchise owners that were more than willing to lend a helping hand.
How would you tell other veterans interested in starting a business or setting up a franchise, how do they prepare for all of that? I mean, you have to do everything.
You do. You really do have to think of every sort of scenario, cross every T and dot every I. But at the end of the day, you have to be willing to jump and take that risk. And if it's not fun, it doesn't get done. So if you're thinking about venturing out on your own business, do something that you're passionate about. Do something that you enjoy. And that will make it that much easier.
And if there's a portion of the business, like dealing with the payroll, that you don't want to do, hire somebody good that can do it, right?
Exactly. Excellent point.
Well, we're just about out of time, Gabe, but any words of wisdom for our veterans? There's a lot of veterans coming home now, and a lot of them going to be coming off active duty, and a lot of them going to work for people, but there's a few of them that are probably going to want to start businesses. What would you tell them?
I would say, again, definitely consider something that you're going to enjoy and be prepared for everything that you can think of, and seek out people that have had experience in that business before, and because that will help you unbelievably.
Owning a business isn't 9 to 5 and then you go home and forget about it. It's 24/7.
Oh, it's 24/7. Be prepared for that, especially in the beginning.
And if you don't do it, sometimes it doesn't get done. And if it doesn't get done, you're going to have trouble.
That's correct.
Well, Gabe, sounds like you've had a great experience. I hope your business does fantastically, and appreciate you coming to visit us today to talk about starting a veteran-owned small business.
Thanks so much for having me on, Tom. I appreciate it.
That was Gabe Broughton-Lee talking about veteran-owned small businesses on Minnesota Military Radio. In a moment, we'll see what it takes to make a successful transition from military to civilian life. This is Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. In a moment, we'll see what it takes to make a successful transition from military to civilian life. But now it's time for the Commissioner's Corner, a weekly update from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Here's Commissioner Larry Shalito.
This week, the Minnesota Assistant Council for Veterans, also known as MACV, is hosting a stand-down to reach and assist homeless veterans. The stand-down will take place August 6th and 7th at Base Camp at Fort Snelling. The event focuses on bringing services to one location. We know that otherwise, these veterans would not seek out services and benefits that are due to them. Hundreds of caring volunteers and professionals are coming together for this event. It is an incredible sight to see all the parties involved to provide a much-needed safety net for our veterans who are experiencing difficulties. This net can take many forms, including food, shelter, clothing, health screenings, counseling on VA and Social Security benefits, and referrals to a variety of other necessary services such as housing, employment, and substance abuse treatment. These groups are committed to using their resources to address the unique needs of our homeless veterans. This program works. I want to thank MACV for organizing this incredible event and others like it, year after year in various areas across the state. For more information, visit macv.org.
Thank you, Commissioner Shalito. For more information, please go to minnesotamilitaryradio.com. Joining me now is Vince Hokanen from the Transition Assistance Advisors, part of the Minnesota National Guard. Vince, welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. We haven't had you on for a few months.
Hey, Tom. It's great to be here. Thanks for bringing me back in and get to talk about these transitions that our soldiers are going through and the help that's for them. Thanks for having me on today.
Well, I'm glad you came in, and we're having you in today in a civilian capacity so we can talk about what you do as a Transition Assistance Advisor. But you've been in the military for a while and a chaplain. Can you tell us a little bit about your military career?
Yeah, I've been in the military since 2007. I had some prior service when I was enlisted as a heavy equipment operator. I came back in 2007 to support chaplaincy. And I've been in ministry for 22 years now, and it was just a blessing to come back in and assist our soldiers and provide spiritual and pastoral care to them. And I've been I did rear det for a few years with the CAB and for another unit, and then BCT here in the last year, and then I deployed myself in 2010.
And as I recall, Vince, that you were ministering to the families of the troops when the Red Bulls were deployed over to Kuwait.
That's right. I was their rear detachment chaplain and helped take care of families and making sure that we could do all we could to help sustain them during those difficult deployments.
And now recently, some months ago, you you are now in the unit called Transition Assistance Advisors. Can you tell us what that is?
Well, the Transition Assistance Advisor is a statewide point of contact for accessing benefits. Essentially, we're non-clinical case managers, and we help soldiers access the benefits that they're entitled to. And we're appointed by the DOD. We're a DOD contractor. Skyline is our contractor, and we work for the J-1, essentially. And we assist soldiers navigate all the benefits and entitlements they have coming, because in certain cases, it's very complex. And we help them cut the red tape. We actually help them get to the people that submit forms and sign documents. And then we follow on and provide that care to make sure that they actually receive that benefit. And so once that relationship starts, then it's an ongoing process until they work through their issue. The other piece is that we work with our wounded warriors. So those that are at warrior transition units, say Fort Riley, Fort Knox, whatever, one of those, then as they're coming off of Title 10 or they're put into the community-based programs, then we pick them up once they're back in the state, and then we educate them and help them navigate tailor make a process, an individual transition plan, as they're going back into being civilians, or they transition the VA healthcare system and get the access and to the right people to get those benefits.
So, Vince, seems natural to me. You've been deployed. You've ministered to the troops. You've ministered to their families. You know what it's like to go and come back. And when our troops come back, they're either going to rejoin their units or they're going to muster out. And at that point, they need to find out what's out there and what help is out there. And you need to take a look at their specific circumstances and see if they need any help with anything. It looks like you've been learning how to do this for years, sir.
Exactly. And the main thing is the soldiers aren't asking for this kind of care at that time because they're still in the military. They're still engaged in their mission. They're still doing the work that they're doing. But for those that are transitioning out of the military, now these questions become more relevant. And it's time to start paying attention and getting down in the weeds on their GI Bill benefits, understanding all the education that they have coming in terms of where they can go to school and how much benefit that they have received. Maybe they have a pending medical issue or an issue that wasn't never resolved and they have to go file a disability claim and they need to be educated about that process. Maybe there's programs that the VA offers and they do that the soldiers can receive medical treatment. Maybe they're getting ready to ETS. They don't plan on staying in. They get back from their deployment. They're going to receive their medical care at the VA. We can get them to the right people and to the right focus in terms of the VA program or the VA system itself. Get them to the right people, and then start that process of care. Maybe they're looking at a transition as far as employment. Maybe they want to start a second career. They come back as soldiers and say, you know what? I want to start a small business. Well, I got individuals that I know in my coalition building and get them small business started. We'll get them popped in the SBA, help them build a business plan, a pro forma, get them on the right track. And I got folks there that I know that I work with that can even help them get money if they qualify. And so they can get this whole career change wrapped around their head. If they have a service-connected disability, we can get them in the Voc Rehab program. There's all manner of benefits that these soldiers are entitled to. They've earned it, and they deserve it. And we just have to keep reinforcing the fact that they're there and get them to the people that can help.
You're on a roll, sir. We're talking to Vince Okunin from Transition Assistance Advisors for the Minnesota National Guard. Now, Vince, can you tell us run through some of the areas here? I see you've got relocation assistance, legal assistance, career change. There's a whole vast array of things here. How do our guard troops find out that you're there? And what do you tell them in terms of, I'm here to help, what are you going to help with?
Well, a lot of the commands are aware of what we do. We do make capability briefings to them. For instance, as the first BCT was coming back, I went to all the rear detachments, all the commanders there, and I gave briefings to all the full-time staff so that they know exactly what we do. And then at the 30, 60, 90-day reintegration events, particularly the 30 and 60, we're there and available to have a booth, and we educate soldiers and set up appointments, maybe even make a referral on the spot. The other place is at the DMOBs. We go down to the DMOBs and we visit with these soldiers. And when the DCS, Deployment Cycle Support, comes in and we provide our briefings of all the local providers, we're there and we can individually meet with the soldiers at that time. So we're already getting a handle on what it is that they might need. So they have 3, 4, 5 different places where they can actually see us. So let's say a soldier makes an appointment with one of us and they say, okay, I want help with legal assistance. Well, the military itself can provide JAG officers, but that's usually for the military issues themselves. But the VA, well, they have another set of help that can come through with an organization called MACV. They're in part funded by the VA. And what they do is provide veterans that are homeless a place to stay, essentially. And then there's the other part of legal assistance. So if they're facing a property change, or maybe they're getting evicted from their home, or maybe they're filing for a divorce or that's going on and they need some legal assistance, maybe there's a will or an issue like that, they can get some assistance through MACV, and then we can get them perhaps pro bono work. The FACs also work with that a little bit, and we can get them to folks that we know. Maybe they're looking at moving and they need to go to another state. Well, we can help them transition to the next TAA who's in that state and do a warm handoff, because every state in the union has a TAA, and we give them that point of contact, and then that transition assistance advisor in that state knows all the local resources, and we can get them connected with that individual and help them in the process of finding a place to stay, and maybe they're getting a new job or something like that.
Vince, we just got a minute left in this segment, but I would guess that when they come back from a deployment and they're demobilizing, they're just happy to get home. But then when they come back for that 30, 60, 90, now some issues have cropped up, and maybe they have to change units, maybe they have to move, maybe they need some legal advice. So that's when you're at those reintegration events, then you're available, and whether or not it's something you can help with, you can either help them with it or get them to somebody else that can help them.
Precisely.
So
and
that they're not alone with these problems.
Exactly. And that's the coalition building that we do. We need to know people that are out there to help them so that we can get them to the right people, the right resource. And if we don't have the answer, we're going to get the answer for the soldier. And we'll do a couple of days of research and we'll get back to them. And it won't be a answer, Tom. It'll be the answer.
We're speaking with Vince Hokkanen from Transition Assistance Advisors. Vince, we've got to take a short break. This is Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be right back.
Hi, this is Bill Popp of the Minnesota Military Family Foundation. An Army squad is made up of 8 soldiers, and when the squad is on patrol, each soldier is dependent on each other for safety. When a soldier is distracted because of a financial crisis with the family back home, that puts every soldier on the squad at risk. The Minnesota Military Family Foundation helps turn a bad situation into a positive one. The foundation provides financial support during a financial crisis at home. This helps re-energize the soldier. The soldier feels the financial burden lifted and has feelings of pride because of the support from the community at home. When the soldier is no longer focused on the financial crisis at home, the soldier is able to stay engaged in the mission and do his duty to protect other soldiers in the squad. When we help one soldier, we're helping all soldiers. When we help one military family, we're helping all military families. If you're in a position to help, please donate. Go to MinnesotaMilitaryFamilyFoundation.org.
We're speaking with Vince Hokkanen from Transition Assistance Advisors for the Minnesota National Guard. And for all our listeners, if you know a veteran or a Minnesota National Guard soldier or airman that needs some, has some problems or issues and needs some help, have them send them to beyondthelribbon.org, and they'll find an area there for Transition Assistance Advisors, Vince.
That's right. Say that 17 times.
Or they can find out how they can contact you. Now, Vince, I think there's two areas here where you help them, and one is on the reintegration before they go and when they come back from deployments, and the second one is wounded warriors. Can we talk about everybody knows that the Red Bulls had 2,700 soldiers deployed for a year in Kuwait, their home. There's a lot of press on that, but there's a lot of smaller deployments going and coming all of the time, isn't there?
That's right. Several hundred, actually, in terms of soldiers that are going in and out. It's winding down. It isn't to the thousands, but yes, there's still groups that are going overseas, and there's going to have a need for help, absolutely.
And you provide some training and resources for them and their families on the way before they go on deployment, and then when they come back, if there's some issues, then in the 30, 60, 90s.
Absolutely, and we do those family preparation academies and those pre-return or pre-deployment events, and we're doing those. We man our booths the same way, and we're available to answer questions or point them in the right direction, and then, of course, they see us again on the way back on these when they come home, and we can do the same kind of process, and usually then they're listening a little bit more.
We hope they are, Vince.
Yeah.
I'm impressed. In the last couple of years, we've learned about the family readiness groups. We've learned about the training before they go. We've learned about the resources that are available for the families while the troops are deployed. And now the reintegration on the way back, there's an awful lot of support for our troops and for our families while they're preparing for deployment, while they're deployed, and when they come back. What a great job.
Yeah, I'm really privileged to be a part of it. I enjoy the process. And as a chaplain, we get to help and some soldiers face, their families face a crisis, and we work up through the crisis or address spiritual concerns, help the families retain their resilience. In this lane, as a transition assistance advisor, I get to fix problems. And I love the idea of fixing things for soldiers, and they deserve that kind of care, first-class care, and I'm going to ensure you that I will provide it to them.
And Vince, one of the things we've talked about is when they come back from deployment and they get off active duty, a number of them are looking for jobs.
That's right.
And you've been helping with that as well.
Absolutely. You know, there's the organizations like DEED that are out there that they're, you know, state, that our state provides. And I have contacts in most counties and workforce centers. And I have a couple of guys who listen to this program, and they'll be saying, blasted, Hokkanen's calling me again, you know, because we use those resources and we want to get them into the agency like DEED that can get them popped in Minnesota Works and get them job searches, tighten up the resumes. And then, of course, those are the guys that are also getting contacts from warm contacts, hot calls on ones that are actually hiring veterans. In fact, just today, I had a soldier that I made a referral to with a company, a local trucking company. They want to hire this young veteran. He is junior enlisted, and they're going to bring him in and train him. He's looking for work. And they're going to hire him in. And so we work together to make these things happen.
And the landing site indeed is positivelyminnesota.com/veterans. And you just helped Jim Finley and the guys take
care exactly
of that.
That's exactly right.
We're speaking with Vince Hokanen from Transition Assistance Advisors for the Minnesota National Guard. Now, Vince, wounded warriors. Occasionally we have some of our troops that are wounded and they get assigned to a temporary unit and they're getting hospitalization and so forth. How do you help them? How does that all work?
Well, what we do is we work with the units. And for instance, when I was doing rear deck for the 1st BCT, we were making contact with the soldiers in a forward element, of course, to make sure that we know where their soldiers are at. They go to launch duel usually, and that's where they are transitioned then back to the continental United States. We call it CONUS. They come back here and they're assigned to a warrior transition unit, like let's say Fort Riley. And while they're at Fort Riley, they're going to be in process there, and then they receive their care and all their medical issues will be addressed. Once they achieve maximum medical improvement or something very close to that, or they're allowed because they're a reservist to get into community-based health care, which is now called remote care, then they get sent back to their home of record and they receive their medical treatment at their home of record in whatever, you know, facility that's used at that place. So if they're at Fort Riley, then we work with the units in establishing contact with those soldiers then. It's sort of initial contact. If you need any assistance, we're here. But as you transition back home, make sure that you, you know, and we'll follow up, make sure you give us a call. We'll help you work through the process because, again, we're non-clinical case managers. So the soldiers that are coming back, whether they're in remote care or whether they're actually released from active duty, achieving maximum medical improvement, and they're going home, then we pick them up at that point, and then that's when we work them through these issues of career changes, disabilities, veterans benefits, employment assistance, legal assistance, financial, health and life insurance, and this sort of thing, and give them, and we take away the blinders, essentially. We educate them on what's out there, what's available, and then we help them develop an individual transition plan to address their concerns specifically.
Vince, I know you're an Army officer, but you help soldiers and airmen.
And airmen.
And when
service members.
and when they're wounded and coming back, they're just really trying to get healthy, but they can be inundated with paperwork and they really don't know where to go.
Exactly.
That's where you step up.
That's right. We come right in and we help them navigate the process and cut red tape. And so service members and their families that are in these transitions, we are there to provide that individual care to them on a one-on-one basis, and they're not in the big crowds and they're not in the big groups. We can meet with them at their home. I can meet with them just about anywhere and start working the process of making referrals and helping educate them on what they have, what they're entitled to.
So you're helping them with veterans benefits, disabled veterans benefits, those type of things.
Yep.
But you also, there's a lot of our soldiers and airmen that come back to get off active duty, maybe don't have a job, but they want to go to school.
Right.
You help them with that too?
Yeah, absolutely. We educate them about the GI Bill and what it is that they're entitled to. And then we have our folks with higher education veterans programs, and we can get them popped into one of those individuals, and they get an understanding of what school would be in a particular lane. In other words, if they want to be in broadcasting, there's the schools that are available to do that sort of thing. And then they get signed up for that school with the folks with HEV-P. They get educated on what they're entitled to, and we start the process, and I follow up in 2 days and say, hey, did you talk with that person? Yes, I did. Did they help you? Yes. Are you getting what you need? Yes. Great. If you need anything, give me a call.
So, Vince, you're the first point of contact. Where does the County Veteran Service Officer come in? Where does the Family Assistance Center come in? How does this all get pulled together? We got about 1 minute left.
Well, what we do is we make sure that they're aware of the particular agency or the group of folks that does what for what issue. If they're going to be out of the military in most cases, and yes, there are plenty of guys who are still in the Guard who will work with their VSOs and filing disability claims. But if they're getting out of the military particularly, then we want to use the full all manner of VA benefits that they're entitled to. And yes, the soldiers that are still in the Guard can use those benefits, but we want to get them popped in their County Veteran Service Office, and that is the place where they will start a claim and they'll be educated on and apply for many of the other benefits that they can achieve through the VA. ebenefits.va.gov is an excellent website. They can go there and get a premium account as long as they have a CAC card, and they can track and find out education. They can print off the certificates of eligibility for VA loan, for a home loan. They can track if they're in a claim status, they can check their claim status. And now they got that My Healthy Vet. That's another website where they can go to and track their medical treatments.
Vince, just a few seconds left. Final thoughts about the Transition Assistance Advisory
Office. It's a fantastic program, and every state is I think they're in need of this. We're very busy, and the soldiers know we're there to help them, and we'll fight their cause, and we'll make sure that they are educated and aware and receive the benefits they're entitled to.
Thanks for joining us again today, sir.
You bet. Thanks, Tom.
That was Vince Hokanen from the Transition Assistance Advisors for the Minnesota National Guard, and you can find more information about that office at beyondtheyellowribbon.org. In a moment, we'll see what effect sequestration is having on Minnesota military families. This is Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. With military furloughs entering its fourth week and affecting some 1,500 Minnesota military families, we'll take a look at what impact it's having. Here's an interview with Army Lieutenant Colonel John Lovold from a couple of weeks ago. Can you tell me, for those listeners that may not know, sequestration, what is it, and what's the backstory on it, and how is it affecting our Minnesota National Guard?
Well, we've certainly seen a lot of it on the news, and it, for the people, for the public who are listening, it might not necessarily sink in for them so much when you hear about it, but for certainly for our Minnesota National Guard members who are now feeling the impact of it, it carries a lot more weight. The government required us to go into a sequestration mode back in March, and essentially then they started scheduling a furlough. A scheduled furlough, somewhat different than an emergency furlough, is we're going to have to save the government money. And in order to do so, what we've done is they've done is directed that we would initially take 22 furlough days until the end of the fiscal year. We did get a reprieve from 22 days down to 11 furlough days. That was a positive, outcome. However, we're still looking, hoping that the government can fix this and actually get that to zero.
So essentially, Congress a while back put in place something called sequestration that forced them to try to balance the budget or cut their spending. They didn't come to an agreement, so sequestration took over. It's affecting everybody, including the military. And so therefore, we're at a point in the process where the furloughs started.
Exactly, Tom. And that point starts this week. The first furlough day for our Minnesota National Guard full-time force occurred this week. So the first of 11 weeks starts now, and we're scheduled to be complete with our furlough days by 30 September.
Now, Colonel, most of us think about the Minnesota National Guard, and we think about our citizen soldiers, and they drill one weekend a month and a couple weeks during the summer, and we're all well aware of all the deployments and so forth, but there is a full-time force that's there in between the weekend drills, isn't there?
That's right, Tom. What you just described is essentially the more than 13,000 Minnesota National Guard members. That force is maintained by having a full-time force that works every day to support those 13,000 Army service and Air service members. The Federal Technician Force, which makes up 54% of our full-time force, is over 1,156 members.
We're speaking with Lieutenant Colonel John Lovold from the Minnesota National Guard on Minnesota Military Radio. Colonel, when we're talking about this, you've mentioned that there's going to be 11 days furlough. Doesn't seem like a lot, but it's 11 days in a short period of time. And for these technicians, it's 20% of their pay over the course of the next 2.5 months, isn't it?
20% of anybody's pay. And, a lot of times it'll be discussed, that the bulk of this force is lower ranking. And a lot of those individuals might be single income family. So if the listeners would think about next time you receive a paycheck, seeing 20% of that check gone, I think it hits home a little bit harder.
And, sir, this is just to remedy the problem through the end of the fiscal year, which is September 30th. My question is, what happens next fiscal year? Seems like it's still there, might be getting worse. How does this get resolved?
Tom, you're asking the same question that I'm asking at this point in time. I'll tell you that I'm out there engaging our commanders and our service members, and that is seriously the biggest question they have right now isn't, what are we going to do this next 11 weeks? But they want to know what's going to happen next year. Is this going to be a continuing, reoccurrence of they can't plan for how much money they're going to be making?
Sir, I'm looking at an article dated July 12, 2013, and it's quoting Secretary of the Army John McHugh. It says the furlough will have a degrading effect on the readiness of the Guard. That's inescapable. Have you seen any effects so far?
Well, Tom, aside from, certainly there's a morale issue right now. We can't get around the fact that half of our full-time force has been directed that they do not get to come into work one day a week. So there's an immediate impact on morale and paychecks. As far as the impact on readiness, we're in the first week. we know what's going to happen. The things that were supposed to happen on Monday did not happen, and they had to get pushed to Tuesday. And we can only keep pushing things so far before there's going to be an impact on readiness.
Colonel, we've had Colonel St. Sauer on the show several times, and he's coming up in a week or two. And I know that it's really busy season up at Camp Ripley. And there's another article here that says 355 guard technicians at Ripley are due for furloughs. They've got a lot of people up there training. What are they going to do?
In where we've been able to try to mitigate some of the impacts of the furlough, we have to schedule one day a week. And in organizations that have coverage that impact the entire rest of the force, the supervisors have been able to manage their personnel by having maybe half of them furlough one day of the week and the other half on another day of the week in order to keep that service available. But for the most part, we aren't doing, you know, we are not doing as much.
Colonel, is there any indication from the Pentagon or in anything else you've seen that Congress is working to resolve this problem, or is it kind of on automatic pilot at the moment? Do you know?
Tom, I would tell you that, you know, I appreciate the fact that the local media is asking these questions, but this is the most interaction I've had with anybody in discussing furlough. Since they've directed that we will do it. So I don't feel as though we're getting any type of a feeling that this is going to be fixed.
Well, I imagine you were hoping it wouldn't happen, but the year kept going on and on and on, and now you're getting to the end of the fiscal year and really had no choice. It has to happen, doesn't it?
The can had, you know, been kicked down the road so many times, and this week it almost feels as though they're not going to kick it anymore. They're going to go ahead and enact that furlough.
Sir, we just got a few seconds left. Is anything else you'd like to share with us and our listeners about the Minnesota National Guard and all the hardworking soldiers and airmen over there?
Well, it is important for everybody to know that while this will, you know, have an impact on our readiness, the Minnesota National Guard is, you know, one of the best trained and manned force in the nation as far as how we're ranked against other guard units. We still stand ready to respond to any emergencies or any, you know, call from the governor or our nation.
Colonel Lovell, I'd like to thank you for joining us today.
Thank you very much, Tom. I appreciate you having me on.
And for all our listeners out there, coming from myself as host of the Minnesota Military Radio, get on the horn and call your elected officials. Ask them to resolve this issue so that we don't have this open-ended problem called sequestration hanging out there and the doubt and the misery that it's causing. Get on the phone, talk to your elected officials. We're just about out of time, but before we go, I'd like to remind you to please join us for Military Appreciation Day at the Minnesota State Fair, Tuesday, August 27th from noon to 4 o'clock for two live recordings of Minnesota Military Radio in our booth in Carousel Park. If you have a mailbag question or suggestion for a topic you'd like us to address, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com and click on Contact Us to send us a note. Thanks for listening to this edition of Minnesota Military Radio. I'd like to thank our guests for joining us this week. Gabe Broughton Lee, Vince Hokanen, Lieutenant Colonel John Lovell, Commissioner Larry Shelato of the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, and finally, Minnesota's Adjutant General, Major General Rick Nash. Please join us next week as we ask the Minnesota National Guard's top doctor what it takes to keep the force medically ready to deploy with all of its stresses and risks of military life. That's coming up next weekend on this station or online anytime at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. I'm Tom Lyons, and I hope that you make a difference in someone's life this week.
You've been listening to Minnesota Military Radio with Tom Lyons. Tom is the founder and owner of Phalon Partners Limited, a Twin Cities merger and acquisition firm. This has been a production of Clear Channel, MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com, the Minnesota National Guard, BeyondTheYellowRibbon.org, and the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Podcasts of the show are available at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com.